Are you looking for practical ministry help to inform and inspire your leadership? Do you have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of other leaders in pursuit of stuff you wish they taught in seminary. Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast, presented by CDF Capital, helping churches grow. Visit them at cdf.capital/unseminary.
Well, hey friends, welcome to today's webinar. Super excited to have you. Today is an executive pastor roundtable. We've got an incredible collection of leaders with you today. These folks are really just in prevailing churches doing amazing things. And it's a privilege that we get a chance to sit down with them and ask some questions. And so as you're coming in, what we want you to do is over in the chat, I never know which, it's over here or over there, one of the sides. We'd love for you to say hi, let us know a couple things. Where are you coming in from? Where, what state or country or wherever you are? And then also tell us a little bit about your church. Like, we'd love to hear a little bit of context. Always, that's always a fun thing to kind of hear from people. So let us know over in the chat. We would love to know that. Now, later today, we are going to be taking questions. And so if you have got questions for our leaders, I'm going to start kind of get the ball rolling, but we want to take your questions. So, you know, don't be shy. You can drop those questions in the chat. So just go over there. There's two tabs there, but if you just even put a question right behind it, I think it automatically dumps it into the Q&A tab. But we'd love for you to, you know, to do that, to drop your questions in there, and we'll make sure that we'll try to answer as many as we can today. I want to get to as many as we can. So we've got Michelle from Costa Mesa, California, the Crossing Church. Good morning, Michelle. Hope your day is going well. We've got Kristen from Northridge. We've got DK Hammond's Embassy City in Irvine, Texas. We've got Kristen from Rose City Church in Oregon. We've got David from Louisiana, Jeff from Miramichi, New Brunswick, Canada. It's nice. It's international. We've gone international, friends. This is, it's a big deal. And then Ellie from the Philippines. Man, I was making the international joke and then it's actually international. Canada doesn't really count, does it? Well, maybe it does. I don't know. Shannon from City Church in New Hampshire, Elm City Church, which is fantastic. We have friends in that part of the world. Yeah, so make sure as you're coming in, friends, as you're logging in, drop in, let us know kind of where you're coming from. We'd be super honest. We got Illinois, North Carolina, all over. We really appreciate you taking time out to be here today. It's going to be a good conversation. So for folks that maybe didn't hear me when we first started, we are going to take questions later today. Oh, but actually, before I get to questions, you're going to want to hold on till the end of today's conversation. So like we will be done by the top of the hour. In fact, maybe even by quarter two, we'll be done by then, but you want to hold until the very end. Do not leave, because Jeremy has got an incredible offer. I know that sounds a little bit like TV infomercial, but it is true. So don't got to wait until the end. For that, it's going to be worth your time. Like literally from a like financial worth your time. And the cool thing about this offer, it's only for the people that are on the live call. So you cannot get this any other way. So you're going to want to pick that up today. Stay to the end. How is that for a hook? You're going to stay for that. And the other thing, as I was saying, if you've got questions, we're going to want to take questions from you. Please just drop them as we're going at any time. Don't wait till the end. Drop them in the chat and we'll make sure we get to your questions. We got Brett. Hey, Brett, good to see you from Bridgewater. Hope things are good. Love those guys. Bridgewater's a great church. Donnie, man, we got friends on the call today. Raleigh, North Carolina, another fantastic leader. Glad that you are here, friends. Well, let's bring in our guests. We're super excited for today. We've got three executive pastors from three prevailing churches. All three of these people, like if I lived in their hometowns, I would be at their church. I would be volunteering, whatever they asked me to do. I would be like the guy in the parking lot. I would be whatever the worst volunteering job, I would be saying to them, hey, you put me in team, put me in coach. I want to help. So first we've got Jeremy Peterson. He's executive pastor at One Church. They are in New England. And Jeremy's a fantastic leader. He's known for his innovative approach to leadership development. He is really has helped ensure a strong, vibrant community across multiple locations of One Church. If you don't know this church, you should be following them. Jeremy, welcome. Tell us a little bit about your church.
Thanks, Rich. Yeah, we're a multi-site church. I've been the executive pastor there for the last 10 years. And man, it's just an honor to be here and be a part of the conversation. And I look forward to some of the questions you guys send our way.
Love it. So good. Next, we've got Kyra. She's the executive pastor of Ministries. I know there's a dot after that into something. Executive pastor of something. Grand Poobah of Ministries. Okay, at Liquid Church in New Jersey. And Kyra has really helped Liquid navigate through some significant periods of growth and expansion. She really is an operational expert. I've seen her up close and seen the ministry up close that she leads. She really is known for a forward-thinking approach, is always trying to figure kind of how do we do things better. Kyra, welcome. Tell us a little bit about Liquid for folks that don't know.
Sure. Well, thanks, Rich. That was a very kind introduction. But yes, we are a multi-site church in New Jersey. We have 8 campuses, 7 are physical, 5 are permanent, 2 are portable, and then we count our online campus as a campus in and of itself. Just if you don't know anything about New Jersey, just to give you the scope of where we're located, our largest campus is 25 minutes from the city, and then our southernmost one is in Princeton, New Jersey, which everyone knows Princeton.
Yes.
And so that kind of covers North, Central, South Jersey, and we've been a church there. We've been there for like almost 17 years now.
Crazy. And I love it because you spoke like a total New Jerseyan. You said the city and people are like, what city?
Well, there's only one city. If you know,
there is only one city, New York City. So love it. So, so good. That's great. Thank you for being here today, Kyra. Fantastic. Yeah. Appreciate being here. And then last and definitely not least, we've got Jesse DeYoung, executive lead pastor at Flatiron Church in Denver. This is a fantastic church. If you're not closely following Flatirons, you should. Jesse is really, you know, is a high level strategic thinker, planner, guiding Flatirons through a number of amazing decisions. He's got a deep commitment to really helping Flatirons drive community engagement and service, really making a difference in the communities that they serve. Jesse, so glad you're here. Tell us a little bit about Flatirons.
Yeah, Flatirons is a church in the Denver area. We got 5 campuses, and we're one of those churches that went multi-site pretty late after huge building projects. So we've got a huge campus, and then we've got other smaller ones. So dealing with that tension has been something that we dedicate a lot of time to. And Flatirons really has a passion for what we call lost and broken people, people that would not fit in some other churches, even though I think all churches want to see all people show up. People just feel at home at Flatirons. And then personally for me, I am currently the undisputed ping pong champion of our staff. So I just think I wanted to brag about that to the thousands of people on this call.
That's great. I love it. So, so good. And friends that are listening in, the thing I can tell you about each one of these people, I've seen their ministries up close and seen them up close. These people love church leaders. They want to help you. And so the reason why they're here today is because they want to help you. And so if you've got questions, drop them in the Q&A there. If you're listening to the replay, you are losing out because you're not going to get the big thing that Jeremy's given away and you're not going to get your questions answered. You should come to the live stuff in the future. But let's start with you, Jeremy. So you're known really for your passion for leadership development. You've been instrumental in coaching and empowering church leaders and volunteers. So let's just jump right in. What approaches have you found that are really most effective for empowering volunteers to take on not just like a serving role, but a leading role, actually leading in one church?
Yeah, great question, Rich. I think the biggest thing for us is we get so excited to have a new volunteer on our team that we are so quick to like background check them, a quick onboard, and then we schedule them, and then we just kind of let them go and do their thing. And what I realized is the biggest challenge is for a lot of churches, they don't have a clear pathway for their volunteers. And I wish I could take credit for this alliteration, but this is not me. And so whoever it was, maybe you're watching this, you can take credit for this. But so we've walked them through this pathway, which is simply to engage them, like have a conversation, hear their story, find out what they're passionate about. Let's not try to plug them into an area that they're not passionate about, which is a recipe for success. And then we enlist them. And so we figure out the background check, navigate that with them, have a clear description. I think a clear description as far as what the expectation is a huge thing for all volunteers so that they know what they're signing up for. And then from there, we move on to equipping them. So training them to volunteer before they serve, not just you sign up, you have a good idea as far as what this is. We're going to put you in a room with kids to teach, and you really have no idea what's going on. We try to do those things before we even like truly empower them. And I would say when we empower them is when we're speaking life into them. We're reminding them why this role matters. So whether you're parking cars, whether you're changing diapers, like for them to realize, like as leaders, they're empowered to help us carry out the mission. Like their role is as important as any other role at the church. But I think a mistake that we usually make is we empower them and then we just kind of forget about them. So I think one of the biggest frustrations and what we've seen, what really empowers volunteers is within like a 30, 45 day after onboarding a volunteer is take some time to evaluate them. And when I say like evaluate, it's not just some people think like evaluate in a bad way. It's, I think, really following up with them, like checking in, like, hey, how are you doing? Are you enjoying your role here as a volunteer? Do you feel supported by the team? Is there anything you need from me specifically? Is there any feedback that you may have for our team? Like, is there something that we can learn from you? So I feel like the more we give them a voice into what they're doing and what's taking place, the more they feel empowered. And we've seen much higher volunteer retention if we can take them through a clear pathway as far as what those next steps are. And so somebody was asking what the first E is. So it's just simply engage, enlist, equip, empower, and then evaluate. And so constantly evaluating, not just the first 30, 45 days, but we encourage our team leads, which are oftentimes volunteers as well, that have been empowered and they're now leading a ministry, and they're directly underneath, say, our kids director, but constantly engaging them and evaluating, like, are you enjoying this? Some people feel like they sign up, they don't get any other feedback, they don't get any other encouragement, and then they just are kind of stuck there. And so we really want them to feel like they're being heard, and we feel like the more heard they are, the more empowered they become.
Love it. What, when you think about moving, is there anything that you're doing particularly to identify those leaders through that pathway to ultimately move them, you know, up to a role where they're supervising somebody? What does that look like at one? How are you doing that? Or is that just, you're just basically have everybody farming, like shopping in your system? Hey, find those leaders, just tap people on the shoulders. What's that look like?
Well, yeah, I think a big challenge I've noticed, especially for some of our younger staff, is they're saying no for somebody before they've even asked them. Right? Like you see a leader walking your church and you start hearing their story and they're a high capacity leader. Maybe they're high up at work. And before we even ask them to volunteer, we've often already said they're no for them, right? Like they're probably, you know, they're a big deal at work. They're probably really busy. I probably shouldn't even ask them, when the reality is some of those like high capacity leaders want to find ways where they can serve. And so oftentimes, if you put them in a very low entry level role, they'll actually get bored in doing that. And so that's kind of where the evaluation comes in, is as you put a volunteer into a role, get a chance to evaluate them and give them feedback. And then not only ask for feedback, but then actually listen to it. There have been multiple times where a volunteer has given us feedback and we've actually been able then to implement that, like, across the five locations, because we realized, okay, something's missing here. And so I think that's been a huge thing for us, Rich.
That's so good. That's good. I wonder, can we get like a little personal? Could you tell me about a leader that you've mentored or somebody in the church that you've mentored? I think sometimes when we lead at a level like this, we can think just all about systems and we can forget about like individual people that you've kind of worked with. Can you think of a situation like that where you can kind of give us a bit of an insight onto what is your personal kind of mentoring of leaders look like? It could be staff or otherwise.
Yeah. So short story on this is we really believed in leadership development. I think most churches that I talk to believe in it. They just don't have a plan in place for what that so looks true. Like.
Yeah.
So what we realized for us is staffing was a huge, massive challenge. Moving, I came from Texas to New England. And for some reason, I'm not sure why, but it seems like most pastors are called either like California, Texas, or Florida. I'm not really sure, but a lot of them are like New England. I've never heard of that. Like, am I going to Canada? Like
it's off the face.
No joke. Rich, I could post things on Craigslist when I was in Texas and I'd have like five people within a week that were like called to this role. But what we realized is that was a challenge for us. And so 6 years ago, I sat down with our senior pastor, and there was another guy, a retired baseball player, successful guy, had won a Cy Young, multiple World Series awards. And he was asking us, like, what is our biggest challenge? And I wanted to say finances, but I figured that probably wasn't the appropriate time to do that in hopes that he would, like, cut a check. But I told him our biggest challenge that we were facing was simply that as developing leaders. Mm. And he looked at our senior pastor and I, and he said, have you guys considered building a farm team? Mm. And I was like, a farm team, like for a church, like, what does that look like? And so he was walking us through the process of him going from a AA team to a AAA team and the process of baseball teams developing their players. Mm. And so as we started talking through that, praying through that, 5 years ago, we developed a residency, which was very much a like hands-on approach in all areas of ministry. And not only like for kids and students, but I mean, if you're passionate about preaching, then there's opportunities for you to be able to preach, worship, mm-hmm. leading, production. Mm-hmm. And so we realized that like the residency for us has truly been a game changer, because we were having such a hard time developing people or hiring people that we needed, mm-hmm. to have like a system in place. And so through that residency program, mm-hmm. I'll share two. One of them was a gal that was from this area, had gone to college for a while, wasn't really sure if that's what she wanted to do. And so the first time I heard her lead a song, I was kind of like side stage with our worship pastor. And I said, well, there's something in her, like, let's find out if she wants to be a part, mm-hmm. of this residency program. And mm-hmm. sure enough, she is. And now she's one of our worship pastors. And maybe I'm a little biased because she's on staff, but like, I would say like top five worship leaders in the country. Hmm. Wow. And it's been our team pouring into her, mentoring her. And now she's in a worship pastor at one of our larger locations. So that's been really cool to see. Another one was a guy, same thing, through our residency program. And I can't just say myself, Rich, like this is, mm-hmm. from a team perspective, like, sure. mentoring and pouring into them. But a guy who came in 3 years ago, very, very sharp guy, like multiple master degrees. And I'm like, I'm not sure he's going to work in this program. He comes in, came in almost a little like arrogant, thinking maybe a little overqualified, but was willing to go through the coaching, which we have a full-time resident director who oversees that. We pair them one-on-one with a mentor, through the year they're with us. Mm-hmm. And this guy has been, this guy moved to a large church as a groups pastor. Just this last year, he became the lead pastor at a mega church in Idaho. Hmm. And wow. So some of those stories would be stories of people like that have stayed here in this area. And mm-hmm. some of them have been area leaders that we've sent to other churches. I would say probably about 50% of the people that go through our residence each year, we end, wow. up hiring. And then 50% of them, we probably end up sending to churches elsewhere. So that's really worked for us. I'm not saying a residency program or building a farm team is for every church, but it's been incredibly helpful for us to really like pour into and develop that next generation of leaders.
So your, give us kind of a framework. I just put a link in the chat to the residency program if people want to know a little bit about it, but just kind of give us the high level, talk a little bit about how long is it, how long do the residents come, where are you finding residents, sure. that sort of thing.
Yeah, so some of it has just been visiting colleges. So our resident director send some of our, actually some of our staff that were residents before, they'll go and visit colleges and have conversations with the students who are there. And so it's typically a college student that's either graduated or maybe they went to college for a season and they're trying to figure out if ministry is for them. Mm-hmm. So like I said, very hands-on approach. We do provide housing for them, like a weekend stipend. Like I said, coaching and essentially a curriculum that our resident director takes them through. Yeah, but then we pair them off one-to-one with somebody in the area that they want to be in. So like if it's preaching, then we would put them with one of our other preaching pastors, and mm-hmm. they would spend that year with them and actually getting reps at some of our smaller locations to be able to preach. Same thing for mm-hmm. worship leaders that are coming in, like one-on-one with one of our worship pastors, and they would get a chance to first kind of like lead alongside somebody, and then at some point leading worship themselves. And so it's a 1 year program. If you know of anybody who's interested, or a lot of times I'm talking to people who are in student ministry and they have that student that graduated 2-3 years ago that's thinking about ministry, isn't really sure if that's what they want to do. They've come and done the residency program to provide clarity for them and figure out if that's what God's calling them to.
Love it. So good. Fantastic. Thank you so much. Again, friends, if you've got questions, drop them in the chat there. We'll make sure we get a chance to ask your questions as well. So Kyra, I got a couple questions for you. So everybody on this call is like a super humble leader, and Kyra is in that. And Kyra really led the charge coming out of COVID particularly, and really in a great way to see Liquid come back. Obviously there's a whole team of people. She's going to say, it's not me, it was a bunch of people. But you know what that looks like as an executive pastor. She has done a great job on that front. And really that's led to a periods of growth and expansion. So here's my question for you. How are you balancing, what strategies are you implementing at Liquid to try to manage the balancing the tension of rapid growth while keeping a strong community feel? Like even when I go on your website, which I'll put a link in there in a second, you know, it literally says you belong here, which a church of, you know, we all know this. We get above 1,000 people. I've said this in many other contexts. You get above 1,000 people. Our competition is the church of 100. It's not the other church across town with the fancy lights. It's the fact that people leave us and go to very small things. So how are you balancing those two? Rapid growth, strong community connection.
Sure. So just to give everybody just a little bit of context to your point earlier, because we are so close to New York, when the pandemic hit, it took us 18 months to actually be able to relaunch all of our 7 locations. So for the past 2 years, we have just been slugging it out with a lot of consistency, trying to start the flywheel of growth again. Mm-hmm. And to the amazing team's credit, but also what God is doing in the Northeast, I mean, mm-hmm. we have experienced incredible growth over the last 2 years. And to your point, now the tension becomes, how do you manage all of that rapid growth? And then what do you do to make it feel small? And one of the things that I've realized is people love going to large churches because they love the resources, but really they want to feel like they're in a small church. Mm-hmm. So the way that we've been approaching that is, for the rapid growth, we have to track every single person that is coming to Liquid. We have to know, who are we serving? Who are mm-hmm. we reaching? And how best can we actually serve them? Mm-hmm. So last year, we actually welcomed over 3,700 people who came to Liquid for the first time in 2023. Mm-hmm. So what we've been doing intentionally this year, and it's part of our organizational goal that I actually co-lead with another coworker, is how do we track their journey at Liquid? So what mm-hmm. we've developed is, we want everybody to go from a new person who is coming to Liquid for the first time to a fully engaged person at Liquid within 100 days.
Mm,
and there are 3 levels within that 100-day journey. You can go from new here, which that is explainable by itself. You're just coming for the first time, to active, which mm-hmm. that means there's a whole range of things that defines what makes you an active person. But that's basically, if you were to think about it in rungs, it is the mm-hmm. lowest level of the bar. Mm. That is people that are just taking certain actions that we have defined within a 12-month period. It may mean that they came to worship once in a month, or they went to one of our live events, like an outreach, what we do in Christmas outreach, or a night to shine, or, you know, any other outreach that we do. It's like a certain, you know, certain things that we define within that category, but it's very low level entry. Mm-hmm. From there, you move to engage, which now then the bar becomes, actually, we start raising it, right? We want you mm-hmm. to be serving at least twice on a team. We want you to be in a small group. We want you to be worshiping at least twice. And the way that we measure that right now is through our kids check-in. We don't take mm-hmm. worship attendance, although that is one of my main goals in life. So hopefully we'll get there one day. So there's, like, again, a lot of categories that we are defining with a lot of intentionality as to what makes a person engaged. And then the end of the spectrum is fully engaged. And that mm-hmm. means you are worshiping, you are tithing regularly, you are in a leadership role, whether it's in a small group or in a team. You are a member, a candidate for a leadership pipeline. But our main objective is that through data, meaning mm-hmm. everything that we do, you have to register for, because mm-hmm. we have to track what you are choosing to do. So one of the biggest changes that we've done is we no longer prescribe the path for you. You get to choose how you want to move within those 100 days based on what your needs are and your interests, but we want you moving. And we're going to be very strategic as to how you're going to be moving and what counts for you to be moving through those levels. The main goal is what I said. We want everybody to be fully engaged within 100 days. And that's how we're measuring rapid growth, which also leads to a conversation about engagement, although that's a separate topic. In terms of how we're then making that feel small, I'll give you two examples of two systems that we have been very intentional about. How do we make a church of thousands feel like it's small? And so our service programming system, so everything that has to do with the experience that we're producing, we've actually taken a lot of risks. So last fall, we did a prayer on series on prayer. And in one of the weeks, we ended, like, part of the service was, we're going to actually now ask that you get with the people that are next to you and gather in groups of twos and threes. And we're going to ask that you share how we can pray for each other. And we put people to pray for one another. And that was super powerful.
Like, love it.
Stories that I heard of people who came up and said, I believe that God ordained the seat that I was in, because by the time that I started sharing what my struggles were, I realized the person next to me was praying for the same thing. And now we're talking, like, we want to meet up and have coffee because we're, you know, we're realizing we're in the same season of life. So there were just stories of people who were like, it's risky. Some people are not used to praying out loud. There's a lot of fear around that, but our people embraced it. And it was beautiful when we actually did that. All seven locations, people were praying for each other. We took pictures of people gathered in groups of threes. Another example, we had a series on anointing. This was actually earlier this year. We anointed every single person with oil.
Wow.
It took a long time.
It's a lot of oil. That's a lot of oil.
It's little moments like that where you're like, I actually feel like I'm known, that I can come up and I will meet someone and I'm going to make a connection. Like, we're living in a relationally poor culture. So I believe the church has the solution to that problem. And so we have to be intentional about that. And then the other example that I can give you is just through our group strategy. We're actually starting something that we're calling Hangouts, which is mostly getting together for the sake of doing an activity. So we had someone who donated 10 spinning bikes to Liquid.
Oh, fun.
They were like, I feel led to lead people in a spinning class. And we were like, okay.
Sure.
Like, put them in the warehouse. And I know people are going to be interested. And so we have some guardrails around that, right? Like, you have to pray. At least you have to do at least a 5-minute devotional. But the purpose of the activity is purely social.
Right.
That actually ties into one of the things that we've been finding, that because if you come to Liquid for the first time, you actually get a little survey with three questions. And one of the questions that we ask is, what are you most interested in? Guess what the number one response is?
Friendship. Relationships? Yeah. Friends. Yeah.
Friendship. So we're trying to, like, a lot of the things that we're doing is, we don't want to become a social club, right? So there's always things that you have to guardrail and things that you have to be strategic about. But we do want to offer opportunities for people to make friends and be in relationship. While also, we want to continue to track who's coming because we want to better serve them. So those are kind of the things that we're leaning into this year.
Yeah, that's so good. I love it. So fresh. And I had another friend said to me, like, very similar, echo what you said, you know, for years, probably for too long, you know, we knew that people were looking for a relationship. But then what did we do? We said, people would come on the weekends and we'd say, you don't get any relationships here. You got to go to small groups to get relationships.
Right.
And then it was like, we were going out of our way to make our weekend experiences stale, distant. And people come for what they want is, like, there's that whole anonymity community thing. We're kind of playing with that. How do we give people enough anonymity to feel in control? But what we need to do is move them towards community. I love that. It's interesting. I want to underline that 100-day thing as well, too. I was talking literally just last week with an executive pastor at a church in Boston, large church, be similar size to yours. And they just did a study where they saw that the percentage of people that don't make a connection after 17 weeks, which is 119 days, if they don't make a connection in those first 17 weeks, they will never make a connection. Like, when they look at all the contact points they have, basically, if we can't get them to come back in those first 100 days, they won't come back. So that's interesting. You know, that's kind of an interesting correlation to your thing. Yeah. Before you were in your current role, you were over campuses. So you're pastor of campuses. And I know that, you know, could you share some insights for multi-site churches that are on? I know they're wondering this, even if they don't want to ask this question. How do we manage multiple locations, ensuring consistent experiences across all locations? You know, there's that whole tension of like, what's local, what's central, what are we doing all together? How do we make this a liquid thing? But I'm assuming Princeton feels different than other places. So, you know, how do you manage that? Help us think, give us how you think about that. And what do you do on that?
Yeah, I mean, gosh, you've hit a trigger button. I can talk about this topic all day long because alignment is a big deal in multi-site churches. And our mutual friend, Jim Tomberling, would say, there is a right way to do multi-site and there is the best way to do multi-site. Now, I don't know if this is the best way, but this is how we do it at Liquid.
Sure.
We are basically like, we do everything the same. Everything from the message is the same, kids is the same, worship songs is the same, the hosting announcements is the same. The way that we actually create spaces in our campuses that are satellite is very intentional. To the point where if you go back and forth between the broadcast and the newer locations, we're getting better at that the more that we do it. There shouldn't be any significant difference except the fact that the teaching is on a screen. But even the size of the screen that we use is super intentional because it really does feel like the communicator is right there. So on that front, that is like kind of like from a matrix organization, that is the directive to all of the campuses, right? We are doing everything the same way. There is, we use the red, yellow, green approach. So within our systems, and there's 21 of them. And as you well know, system stands for saves you stress, time, energy, and money, right? everybody has to do the same thing. However, the biggest part of that piece of how do you actually make sure that there's a quality control to those experiences really rises and falls with the campus pastor. They have to be the culture carriers of what we're trying to create. And if what we're trying to create is communities that feel small within a large church context, then they have to be the ones that are championing the excellence in all of those systems, but they themselves are not drifting out of alignment. And that's always tricky. And in times and seasons, we've been better and sometimes we've been worse. The local expression of how you actually champion your community for us is through community outreach. So that's the part where I'm like, absolutely, you have full decision power of what do you want to do based on the people that you're reaching in your community.
Love it.
For the rest of the part of the whole, really, you have to do it the way that we do it. And so it's constant training of the campus pastors. It is constant creating a culture that they feel that they can carry. That's why our bias is always to hire from within, because to teach someone. And I have done that, right? I have hired people from outside of our organization, and the issue becomes, then culture becomes an issue of preference. It's not an issue of sin. It just becomes an issue of, well, I like to do it this way and you like to do it that way, but who's right and who's wrong? And that is just a lot of sideways energy that is not going to move the mission or what we're trying to do forward. So that's where our bias is at. But I would say if I had to summarize it this way, alignment is a key issue. You have to decide what you want to do. For us, the concept of franchise, right? My main goal is that if you were to go to the broadcast campus in Parsippany, or if you were to go in Princeton, that it would feel like you're in the same church within the context of the curriculum, the worship, the announcements, the message. The feel of the community, however, and the people that you're reaching should be led by a campus pastor who is absolutely well-versed in the culture of our church.
Yeah, that's good.
I hope that makes sense.
That's good. No, that's really good. That's good stuff. And we can, if you've got questions around that, friends, we can loop back around that. Jesse, so man, Jesse's an incredible leader. The fact that we got you on today is amazing. I feel like we have, you know, what a gift for sure. So really appreciate that. Appreciate you, particularly, you know, your church seems to be, man, just so good at staying aligned, staying, okay, how do we ensure that the decisions we're making are aligned with our visions and values? Even earlier today, before the call, you know, we were talking about some stuff and you were like pushing again towards, hey, this is who we're called to be. I just love it. It's so good. Can you help us kind of walk us through what the decision-making or your decision-making process looks like when you're trying to make a choice as a church, either for you or as kind of a big decision, could be anything, but as you're trying to make a decision that ultimately drives towards more alignment, you know, more with your vision and values, how do you do that?
Yeah, Rich, that was a great question. It pushed me because we're kind of the Wild West out here. It's a little bit shoot from the hip quite a bit. And so I was talking to my team about just how we make decisions. And the first thing is the principle is identify the real problem. And so let's say we've got an attendance problem. Our attendance is lower than we think that it should be. The attendance actually isn't the problem. The problem might be, and Rich, you talk about building an invite culture. For us, we're looking at what are the true issues that are behind what we think. Here's like top layer problem, but what's below that? And it might be, okay, the series are not being effective right now, or it could be that there's some gap in terms of parking. There are all sorts of different things. So identify the true problem. Then for me, it's personal brainstorm. And I think people, I see two different ways people brainstorm. Some are more creative. They'd like a blank whiteboard that they can just kind of create from and dream from. And others, I fall into this camp, are more, I would call it strategic. They'd like a full whiteboard that then they can clarify. And so for me, I'm going to try to talk to people who have encountered this. I'm going to try to read up, listen up. So I've got a bunch of information and then try to synthesize, what am I hearing from other sources with what I know about Flatirons? And so that's the second stage. The third is just team input. And that would be, sometimes I'll bring it to the entire team and our lead pastor together. Sometimes I know some of the decisions that I need to run past Jim, our lead pastor, before bringing to our executive team. And then what I like to do is I like to have one or two secret shoppers on the ground level of our team.
That's good.
Those secret shoppers, they've got a good pulse on, like, people are going to tell them things they wouldn't tell me. And at the same time, I know that they've got a heart for our organization. They understand the nuances of leadership. So I'll just ask their opinion on it. And then the last thing is just really the decision-making. And for us, we ask four questions about the decision, because you can make the right decision and it can still be the wrong decision. And so for us, it's, is it the right decision at the right time, done in the right way for the right reasons? And so again, right decision, right timing, right way, right reasons. And I can't tell you how many times we've made what ended up being the right decision, but we made it at the wrong time, or we did it in the wrong way. And so those are four kind of filters we use to make sure that when we present the decision, make the decision, it fits all those filters.
Love it. One of the things about the Flatirons culture as an outsider looking in that I love is there's a little bit of like, what are they going to do next? Like, it's a little bit like bold, a little bit like kooky, in a good way, like in a positive way. This is a between friends. Like, and that's like, so there's like this bold steps thing. Hey, we're going to take bold steps forward. We're going to do things. But then at the same time, like, man, you don't grow a church to the size that you guys have grown to without some stability and without like, hey, we're gonna stick to our knitting. We're gonna do the things we need to do week in, week out. How are you balancing those? What does that look like in your culture? Kind of unpack that. How do you navigate the balance between those two?
Yeah. Sometimes we just take stupid risks, okay? Like, or risks that aren't going to even buy us anything. It's just like, let's just do this because why not? We did a series. So the campus I launched, I think, 10 years ago, the series we started with was called, it was about having the posture of a missionary, and we called the series Missionary Position, and that's what we launched. We gained nothing from it. And so like sometimes we just make stupid risks, but I think first of all, you've got to define like what is truly at risk. Does that make sense? Like, define what's at risk. Is it, this is a pretty significant financial risk, or there's a risk with the connection with our congregation or rapport of the staff, or is really the risk like, I just don't want to get it wrong. Does that make sense? And so for us, so often the risk is a little bit less risky than we think. And so that's a principle, is just define what's actually at risk. And then The second thought that I think, and this has been happening well before I came to Flatirons 12 years ago, is Flatirons went through a very lean season early on in Jim, our lead pastor's tenure here. And so our CFO, Michael, has done an incredible job stewarding the resources and building margin. I think that margin actually reduces the impact of risk. Because if you have margin, and if you've got cash reserves in the bank, you can take a financial risk, and the impact is not actually going to have the consequence if the risk goes poorly. And so we try to do that. I was thinking that the two specific ways we do that is, number one, financially, and then number two, with our staff rapport. Like, we want some equity and some chips in the bank with our team. If we're going to ask them to pull a lot of events off in a season, we want to make sure that we've made some investments there so that there's margin within the relationship, so that that's a risk that we take actually can draw from the bank.
That's so good. That's great. I love that idea of margin. And, you know, we think about that in weeks in the bank of revenue, but there's also with our team, and that's so good. So good. Great, great stuff. Well, friends, we want to get to your questions in a moment, but before we do that, we want to invite you to an event coming up that's actually going to be at Jesse's church, and it's called XP Summit. Jeremy, why don't you tell us a little bit about this, and then what is this amazing offer? That I, man, I've really set you up here. It better be pretty incredible.
Yeah, so I'd love for you guys to join us. Actually, all four of us are going to be at XP Summit. Jesse, Kyra, and Rich are all going to actually be sharing content with it. So we'd love for you guys to join us and be a part of that. It's May 13th through the 15th. We're going to kick off Monday night with Top Golf. And what I tell people is, like, it's like a third content, a third conversations with other executive pastors, and a third of it is just like connections that you'll make and people that you'll meet while you're there. And so we'd love for you guys to join us to be a part of that. If you just go to xpsummit.org, if you click register on there and you use the promo code UNSEMINARY24, I'll write it in the chat. But if you use the promo code UNSEMINARY24 today, it actually reduces the cost of registration in half. Oh, so it's a half price ticket.
Wow.
If you register today. Yeah,
that's
Seminary 24. So sign up and join us and come hang out with us.
Yeah, friends that are listening in. So that's just for people that are here live today. So you're going to want to jump on that right away. But even more so, if you're listening to the playback on the podcast or just in the future, like, this thing will probably sell out. We were just talking about registration stuff. We're down into, you know, a couple dozen seats left. So even more so than just, you know, the discount, you're going to literally lose the opportunity if you don't jump in. So I would love to have you there. It's going to be a great thing. A lot of fun. I'm terrible at golf. So it'll be fun to be together. Okay, so let's drop some questions in there. Is only available for XPs or for lead pastors too? We'd love lead pastors. We like them. It's an event for executive pastors, but I don't think we're going to turn them away. Are we? I shouldn't be talking about this. I'm just the host of this thing. Jeremy, what do you think?
It really is designed for executive pastors by executive pastors. But we do have some who are bringing their executive team. So we've had a few churches register that have, you know, like three people on their executive team, and they're all coming to be a part of it. So the only downside to lead pastors being there, if you come with your lead pastor, you're not able to talk about them, would be the only downside. So they're more than welcome to come if they'd like.
If that is, Kristen, if you're a lead pastor, I'm sure this would not happen with your executive pastor. But the thing I love about this kind of event is, you know, I end up in these conversations a lot of times when I end up coaching churches where either the executive pastor pulls me aside and says, man, I really love my executive pastor. They're an incredible person. They really cast vision. They're incredible. But, like, can you help me understand how I can have a better relationship with them? Can you help me work through how do I manage that relationship better? Or a lead pastor pulls me inside and says, man, I really love my executive pastor. They're an amazing person. They're super good at execution. They get stuff done. They don't say stuff. And they're a great person. Man, I just love them so much. But can you help me understand how a better relationship with them? Like, it's a common question. So one of the things I love about this experience is it's a chance to interact with other XPs And not that that's the only thing you're going to talk about, but it does come up.
Rich, don't give it away because that is exactly the breakout that I'm leading.
Hello. Look at that. Bonus. That's the problem. Kyra will tell you how to fix it. I don't work at Liquid Church anymore. She still does. That's why you should listen to her. That could tell you, you know, why moving on. So we're going to come back to a question at the end with everybody. I'm going to get you to rapid fire. They're going to come up to Kristen's question at the end, but I'm going to get each of you to try to come up with a compressed answer. I'm going to give this to you now so you can think about it. And so it's at the end, not right now. It's what is the biggest hurdle that you're facing right now? And how are you working towards solutions on that? So what's your biggest hurdle? And, you know, so we'll come back to that in a little bit. So Kristen also asked a question. What database do you guys use to track your, what do you guys use? Let's go around the horn, Kyra, Jesse, and then Jeremy. What database do you use?
Rock RMS.
Right.
Rock RMS.
So we recently, just changed to Planning Center. We realized that we were using all these different platforms, and we've actually consolidated everything into Planning Center in the last couple of years.
Love it. That's great. And what would you say? Thumbs up, middle, or down? None of those people sponsor this podcast. So what do you think? You feeling good about your solution? Yeah, I'm kind of moderate. Yeah. That's good. It's good to hear. Jesse, this is a question around security measures. What security measures, if any, do you have to put your volunteers through, especially for child safety, that sort of thing? What does that look like for you guys?
Yeah, for us, if you work with kids, students, or younger kids, everybody goes through a background check. Mm-hmm. And then we'll do yearly trainings. We use a company called Ministry Safe, and they've helped us kind of refine the process. But they just let our volunteers know what to be looking for, what to be aware of. And then they also just kind of bring up some harrowing, unfortunate examples of what's happened at other churches, just so that they're aware of. Sometimes volunteers think, man, like the fact that we've got to do bathrooms a certain way, or we've got to do rooms a certain way, it's just inconvenient. And so Ministry Safe really has allowed us to put some examples in front of them where they go like, oh, the reason we do things is for a reason, and they take it seriously. So background checks for all, and then Ministry Safe has helped us build some content around it.
Yeah, that's great. Any kind of different for you, Kyra or Jeremy, around that stuff? Any kind of
very similar. We use Protect Your Ministry. We do have a covenant. I don't know if you guys talked about that, but for us, any team where you are in leadership, teaching kids, or a platform ministry, so think about worship, prayer team, all that stuff, we do have to have, outside of an interview, we have a covenant that we go through with our leaders, where it primarily covers three areas. It covers the sexual ethics conversation and everything that is embedded within that, including cohabitation, same sex, all that jazz, gender modification, all that stuff. Substance abuse. So for us, we require 24 months where you're free from any addiction to be in leadership or to serve in these specific teams. And then the other one is social media. Friends, we are in an election year, and how we use our social media says so much about who we are as leaders. And we don't want to alienate the people that we're leading at the expense of making a point. So we do have those conversations with everyone.
That's good.
That's really good. Rich, we just recently started background checking every person who volunteers in any capacity. Mm. And I know there's a cost involved with that, but if you're a greeter and you're, you can't just get pulled into the kids ministry if you haven't been background checked. And so we started doing it for all volunteers. And obviously there's always challenges that come with that, but it's really kind of helped us provide that safe space for all who are here, which is something that we're working towards, especially for kids and students.
Oh, that's good. That's really good. What a great layer of kind of support there. Actually, you know, with Kyra, you a couple weeks ago, I was at maybe 3 weeks ago, I was at a church, like large church, 20,000 plus, and their staff meeting that day was on exactly the issue that you're talking about, which is social media, particularly around this election year. And it was, I would say, a closed door conversation, not to be repeated, but it was like a pointed, very pointed conversation with our staff around, hey, like, it was gracious, but it was like, hey, friends, we don't want to overstep. We don't want to step on landmines here around these issues. Are any of you tackling that issue? Any having any kind of conversations around that specifically in your church? It's fine if you aren't. That's fine.
We just said, hey, no political posts or things that can be seen as political. And we hated having to do that, but at the same time, it became just too inflammatory. So our staff, we haven't done anything with volunteers at this point. That might be a great next step, but just staff at this point.
We don't have a policy, like, you know, in terms of like you can't or can, but we do actually follow up with people when it comes, when it gets to the point that, you know, Jesse, you were just describing where it's like too much. We actually do engage with our leaders in that. And, you know, now that I think about it, we haven't really had that problem in a long time. And I think part of it is because it's so embedded in our covenant culture. People understand that you really shouldn't be doing that, right? Like never lose influence at the expense of making a point.
Right. Yeah, that's good. Any thoughts on that, Jeremy?
Yeah, I mean, for our staff, we do actually have a policy in place for social media, and that would be one of the items on there is no posting anything political.
Right. So Kristen asked the question whether she could get a copy of that covenant. Is that a public thing? I know we have a document that's actually not public.
It's public. But Kristen, if you want to email me, it's Kyra@liquidchurch.com, and then maybe we can take it offline.
Have a conversation. Yeah, that's great. Okay, good. Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. That's not weird that it's not public. I've seen those kind of things, and because it needs to be in the context of relationship, right? Like, got to sit down and actually have a conversation with somebody.
Yes.
Those, ironically, those two things we just talked about are kind of related, which is kind of fun. So, all right, let's get to that question. You know, going around the horn. Maybe we'll start with you, Jeremy, then Jesse, then Kyra. What is a hurdle that you're facing right now, in your church, and kind of what are you doing to tackle it? How are you working towards that? Starting with you, Jeremy.
Yes. So our model is a little different, where we actually do in-person preaching at all locations, and the lead pastor preaches primarily online. So for us, the biggest challenge is we've realized, I think to Kyra's point, if there's not alignment, if there's not buy-in on what the, not only the culture is, but the core values for our locations, it's so easy to go off course. And so a lot of it, I feel like, is just kind of like, okay, reining people back in. No, we're not going to do that. What can we try this? No, we're not going to try that. And so that's been our biggest thing. And so with that, we created, a playbook, and for us, the playbook is essentially what happens at the central level, what happens at the location level, where does collaboration take place, just to give clarity, to our team. And we've really been working on that over the last, year, just to provide clarity, to all staff.
Love it. That's so good. I was talking to Mark Job in Chicago. They have 20 some odd locations where they do preaching live and local, and, you know, alignment is an issue for them. And it's funny. I asked him, I was like, how do you do that? And asking that seems like a crazy thing to try to do. And he answered, he was like, almost the fact that I asked the question, he was puzzled by that, you know, a little bit. And he said, well, I get together with all those lead pastors. We have meal together every Monday, and I spend a lot of time working relationally with those, you know, with those people. And I was like, oh, that's a good answer. That's good. You know, there's the policy stuff, which we need to do. We need to be real clear, crystal clear on exactly what we're doing, but then there's a relational thing there as well. Jesse, what about you? What's a hurdle you're facing? How are you tackling it?
A hurdle that we've been facing is, I would say, the quality and the buy-in of our mid-level leaders. So we have strengthened our executive team. I feel like we have great ground-level employees, but most mid-level managers were never taught how to lead or to manage. They were just great at what they did. And then they had to move from being friends and peers into being leaders. And so we've been spending now, it's been 14 months of direct investment with our mid-level leaders to try to get them to take ownership of decisions, of hires, and really of the strategy of Flatirons as a whole, and not just their own department. And so formed a team with them, and watching them. It though took us probably 10 months before they actually started thinking about how would Flatirons as a whole view this, not how would my campus view this or my ministry view this. And so, but it's taken direct investment from me every week for 14 months to get us to a place where those teams are gelling, unified, and able to make decisions and call each other out.
Wow. Wow. That's cool.
I just felt your pain, Jesse.
Nice. Kyra, what about you?
Well, that was good. You know what? I was just reflecting that for us, we have made the decision to go all in on digital. I know that this is a controversial topic. I'm not approaching this in any way or form as a right or wrong decision. For us, that's just the decision that we made. What we've realized is our digital ministry actually helps grow our physical locations, mm-hmm. and that people mm-hmm. are actually choosing to go online and in person all of the time. They're the same, right? They just sometimes come in person and sometimes online. So the integration of those two things within our culture and within our staff, and not only that, but the how do you actually learn to use the data that we are mm-hmm. tracking? I was in a meeting recently with someone and they said data has a place at the table mm-hmm. and it always tells a story. And so how we help our staff become data literate so that we can make better decisions that are not based on feelings or anecdotal as we continue on this journey of being a church that has physical presence as well as digital presence, and that we're reaching people that are traveling back and forth between the two. Mm-hmm. It's painful. You know, it takes a lot of training, to Jesse's point earlier of what he's been doing. It takes a lot of intentionality, a lot of training, a lot of workshopping, teaching people how to do that, how to not just see the numbers, but actually identify trends and then what to do about it. That's a journey that we are starting to be on. It mm-hmm. excites me because I feel like there's just so much opportunity for growth in that, but it mm-hmm. is. You know, it is definitely a challenge. It's a whole new way of doing and looking at ministry.
Yeah, that's great. I would encourage people. I'll put the links in the chat there. I would encourage people to download the Liquid app. I what you guys are doing. Describe what you're doing there, because it's. I keep trying to tell people about it. I'm on it, and I'm like, this is different than other church apps that I've been on.
Yes. So
how do you guys think about your app?
That was part of our initiative last year. We made the decision we're going to invest in digital in the same capacity that we would invest if we were launching another location. So that's how much we put into it. And with that came a whole new app, a whole new website, and a whole new approach of how are we integrating these things into every ministry and the life of our church. So for the app itself, we decided this is going to be our primary insider tool. So website mm-hmm. is externally focused. It's for people mm-hmm. who are just kind of looky loose. Mm-hmm. App is where we're going to do everything. We don't want it to be a billboard right. of just announcements and things that we're doing. We want this to be an interactive app that enhances your own spiritual walk with Jesus, but also lets you schedule yourself on your dream team, and also lets you access your giving statements, and you do everything within your app. Mm-hmm. And so we rolled it out last fall as part of our prayer series. We had over 100,000 people praying for each other in our app, being mm-hmm. super vulnerable about the things that they were needing prayer for, and then getting notifications that people in the community were praying for them. And so we've just been integrating the app for everything. Like literally, mm-hmm. if you want to go to anything at Liquid, you need to go to the app to register, yep. to sign up, to get your daily devotionals. We've been reading through the Gospels. We had a team of people who have been reading for Lent, Mark and Luke. You get your devotional from there. Like everything is within the app. So it's both a spiritual tool, but also a very practical one for people who are calling Liquid Church their home.
Love it. It's so good. I would encourage people to pick that up. Well, friends, we've come up to the top of the hour. I want to encourage you to actually come to XP Summit. The good thing about this event, and Jeremy talked about this, but like a big part of this is contact and relationship and getting a chance to talk with people. And there's time in the schedule to actually just get a chance to sit down, and you don't have to listen to somebody like me yammer on. You could actually just ask these people your questions. So we really would love to have you come to that. So it's just xpsummit.org. Jeremy, we're going to give you the last word. What would you say to leaders around coming to the summit, or just encouragement as we wrap up today's conversation?
Yeah, thanks, Rich. Like I mentioned before, we're all going to be there. We'd love to meet you if you're on this webinar. We'd love to have a conversation with you, dive in deeper to some of the questions that you may have. And part of the reason why we do try to keep it around 100 people is so we can have those conversations and we can have those connections. And it's not a packed conference, but we leave some margin to have, you know, some of those conversations. So we'd love for you to come and be a part of that. And one of the perks of coming to this is your very own Rich Birch's book is going to be given to every person who comes to the XP Summit.
Nice.
About invite culture, which I've had a chance to read. It's incredible. Picking up copies for our team and the location pastors. So bonus for coming and hanging out with us. Rich may even sign a copy for you while you're there, if you're nice.
Exciting. Well, friends, I really appreciate you being here today. We're just honored that all three of you would spend time here today. It's so great. Just want to, you know, just ask a blessing of the Lord on you and your ministries. We're just so thankful that you're serving, and thank you for being here today. And thanks for everybody joining in, whether it was live, the folks that were here with us today, whether you're lunch hour, beginning of your day, or the people that are listening to the replay. We're so honored that you would do that. We'd love to see you at Flatirons there in May. So thanks so much, friends. Have a great day. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to the Unseminary Podcast. Drop by unseminary.com for more helpful resources for you and your team. There you will find articles, online courses, and so much more. Unseminary, stuff you wish they taught in seminary. Presented by CDF Capital. Visit them at cdf.capital/unseminary.